Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another quick and fun bonus episode of Science versus Fiction. I am science fiction enthusiast Scott Weinberg, and I am joined, as always, by my illustrious co-host,
Dr. Stephen DeGennaro, PhD.
Dr. Stephen DeGennaro, PhD, Doctor of Astronomy, Doctor of Filmmaking, and Doctor of My Heart. Good to talk to you, Stephen.
Good to talk to you.
All right, so as we are cooking along on what turned out to be our nonstop pilot series, we have now stopped on a very well-regarded science fiction series, and we are going to talk over the pilot episode of The Expanse. And I'm going to have some questions for Steven, but before we do that, let's just start it. I am paused on a blank screen at zero, so if you want to watch along with us, I'll do this. 3, 2, 1, play. Sci-fi original series, Steven.
Oh, this is a sci-fi original series?
Yup. Well, not anymore, it isn't, because okay. Canceled it, and Amazon picked it up. I'm just going to say right off the bat, I have not read the books, but I am considering picking up the first one audio style, because I love audiobooks, and I especially like science fiction in audio, because it, like a movie sometimes, it allows you to, like, you know, your brain to run free on audiobooks, and you're not as focused with the eyes, and your brain can go a little crazy. And I think I'm definitely going to pick up the first book. Have you or your wonderful wife Randy read any of these novels?
Never even heard of them.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Okay.
No, nothing about it. I didn't even know it was based on a novel.
Yep. And it's funny because you are a huge sci-fi fan and reader and aficionado and whatnot. I had assumed that you had seen a good portion of The Expanse, but why don't you give our listeners your background with this show?
I watched it for the first time yesterday. I knew nothing about it. And, I had heard the name before. I didn't have Amazon. I literally got Amazon so that I could record this podcast. So, yeah.
And everybody out there who's listening, who's almost definitely an Expanse fan, I am... My knowledge is friends turned me onto it. I binged the first two seasons in a night or two nights, and then I watched the third season over a weekend. And I've not gotten into season four, which just recently debuted on Amazon, its new home. What I like about this show, and I think what a lot of people like about it, is that whereas Star Trek and a lot of sci-fi shows, good, great, or not so great, they're kind of standalone, episodic. Even Battlestar Galactica, which does have, several cool arcs, they're kind of, I hate to keep using the word modular, I use it all the time, but they're kind of standalone episodes in a lot of ways. And this feels like a political soap opera that takes place 300 years in the future. And I really like that premise right there.
Yeah. Point of science, I love that they have her hair floating in these scenes.
Yep.
It's a thing they get wrong often in... pretty much always.
And there's another thing that I think you'll love, Point of Science, when we get to it, but I'll bring it up now so I don't forget, because I do. You and I like to sometimes jokingly pedant about gravity, artificial gravity.
Yeah.
And this movie solves that by giving them their, gravity-style boots, magnetic boots, gravity, whatever, call it whatever you want. But now you don't have to necessarily worry about the full scale of gravity because they have these boots. And I like that.
Yeah. It wouldn't affect the other things. So, we'll talk about this more when we get there. But, it would still be the case, especially on something like Ceres, which has very, very low gravity, if you stuck a coffee cup on a table, it would probably bounce up a couple feet if you weren't careful.
Right. There we go. So you just show a little. Now, this is all a very kind of abstract opening that I like, but it's kind of odd for a pilot, because this almost feels like a sequence that you'd put at the beginning of a movie.
It comes back in a sense, sort of. Because they end up,
it pays off a lot later in the season.
Yeah, well, I'm saying in terms of the pilot, I guess that's part of the point of a pilot. It's the mystery of who is this woman? What is she, what happened
to her? Yeah.
Yeah.
what I like a lot, another thing I like is it almost feels like a lot of times a pilot looks like a calling card. Like, you know, because that's what it is. A pilot is supposed to appeal to the executives and the test audiences, and they go, what do you think of this pilot? Does it have promise? Is it great? Is it terrible?
I doubt they did that this way because you know, it's probably went right to series.
You just read my mind. But this feels a little more confident in a way of, we're not trying to win anyone over. We already have a first season, and we're just jumping. Not entirely, this whole prologue notwithstanding, they kind of drop you right into some characters and make you catch up a little, which in a good way. But whereas if this was an Adventure of the Week type show with a few little arcs, they would try to make the pilot a lot more just actiony or funny or you know, a lot more...
A stark difference between this and, like, for instance, Serenity, which we did back at the beginning.
A little more gee whiz to the pilot. And so it feels like they knew they had a little... leeway to just, we don't have to win you over with flash and bang in the first episode. We can kind of just lay the foundation.
Yeah, but I mean, my experience after only watching this first time was that it didn't hook me in any way. So I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing.
No, I get that. I do. But I could see watching this pilot, and if I knew nothing else about the show, the books, the positive response, and I just watched this first episode, I'd be like, yeah, I'll give it two or three more. But you know, Steven, because you and I talk about TV a lot when we're not recording, you know as well as I do that lots of good shows had B- or C+ pilots. Or even first seasons, you know?
Yeah, but I there's a sense in which I don't know that you can get away with that anymore. Like, and it sucks. And I don't know that I'm proud of this necessarily, but it's like, I have a list 40 shows long of things that people told me are awesome and I need to see. And like, you get one episode, maybe two. And if you don't got me, then I'm moving on.
Well, you are you're tough to please. You are. I'm a kind of a, you know, a soft touch. I'm easy to please. I mean, I might not love your show, but I will at least probably give you something back. You're a little tougher to please.
It's not even about being tough to please as much as it is. I mean,
I don't mean it in a bad way.
Please,
I don't mean like you're trying to be. I don't mean like you're like holding your leg, you're folding your arms and going, meh, impress me. I don't think you're doing that. I just think that you just are a little bit, maybe you're more demanding or discerning. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I have better taste than you. That's all.
No. No. I did not say that.
I have better taste than you. And so I don't fall for garbage.
I kind of thought that you would love the fact that it was just kind of like a lived-in sci-fi world in which intrigue and politics is already happening.
Again, that's fine. See, the thing, you know, Randy and I go back and forth about this all the time when we're talking about books and we're talking about TV. Like, worlds are not what attract me. Characters are what attracts me. Like, is there a compelling character? You watch the pilot of Breaking Bad and you're like, holy crap, I want to see more of this Walt dude and more of this Jesse dude. Like, I couldn't tell you any of the characters' names in this. I think obviously they're all, you know, competent actors. Thomas Jane's great. But none of the characters in this show, especially on the ship, in any way feel like people I want to spend more time with.
No, I'll give you that. But again, it's also, is that not fair to say that we're looking at like a fraction of Act One? So you're really only getting, you're not getting a lot of these full details of these characters yet at all. You're not supposed to.
You don't
really get the Thomas Jane character fully fledged for the first, I don't think, I mean, I haven't seen season one for a long time, but I think it goes back to that comfort of knowing that they had a full season to stretch their legs where they're not like...
Again, that's fine. But when there are 500 new shows being made every year right now.
Yeah.
So like, how long, you know, I have to really, really trust somebody's opinion to watch something that I'm not grabbed by for more than a couple episodes. You know, this whole, oh, by the season three, it gets really good. It's not going to cut it for me. I gave up after four episodes on The Leftovers. I don't care how good people said seasons two and three were.
Well, yeah, no, to me, that doesn't...
I have a limited amount of time. Saying. I'm 43 years old. I'm going to be dead in 40 years. And meanwhile, there's only more stuff getting made. And so, like, I have a list of I mean, I'm a parent. I don't get to watch stuff very often. So, I mean, maybe that's another part of the difference is that you have a lot more free time to watch stuff. I don't. And so, like, I have to, you know, we're only on episode two of The Mandalorian right now and three of Watchmen. And those are both shows that I like and want to watch more of. But because we don't have the time to actually, my wife and I, to sit down and watch it. And, I don't have a whole lot of time myself to sit down and watch stuff. I'm not going to watch stuff that doesn't interest me.
Look, nobody here... Nobody here told you. Nobody told you to get married or have kids. Mm. Sorry. I know. You know.
At any rate, let's actually talk about this show that's happening on screen right now.
Yeah, and by the way, his family is wonderful and beautiful, and I love them. I'm just joking. I'm not sure I get the fedora thing. It's a little.
I mean, they're going for this sort of noir.
Yeah, I know. Thing, I know, but that's kind
of. I'm not a fan of this color palette, or should I say, lack of color palette.
Yeah, it's a little harsh, but it's a little cheap.
It looks like they shot it almost looks like Sin City. It almost looks like black and white with little bits of color here and there.
Yeah, no. To me, it's just like, oh, they didn't have time to light it, so they overlit it.
I mean, you know, it's clearly an artistic choice. It's this sort of drab, like, I guess they're going for, they want this kind of noir-y feel.
But this shot on the train I quite like this. I think that's an effective shot. Some color and some, you know, dark shadow. You know, I think some of it is creative and some of it is the
so, yeah, here's a great example, right? So we've got this, you know, the arc with this character here, you know, where Thomas Jane takes a bribe from him for looking the other way with his lousy air filters. And then by the end of the episode, Thomas Jane realizes, hey, that's wrong and little kids can die from it. So I'm going to
Think he already knows it's wrong, but he's playing the con. He's playing the guy.
He's not playing the guy. He's taking money from him. Implied that he's been taking money from him for years.
Right, but I mean,
and then suddenly he has a change of heart at the end of the episode, and he go and kick the guy's ass, and you're supposed to be on his side, and you're just like, eh. Again, it's just a thing I feel like I've seen in a million TV shows before, like the hard boiled detective guy who, you know, suddenly realizes that he has a conscience. It's just, it's boring. It's so done.
Like, I think that it might be his third, because there are three main connective stories in this series, or at least in the first season. I think his is like, you know, in the past they've tried to, and to some degree of success, combined science fiction with Western. I think the Thomas Jane third, like you said, is supposed to be futuristic sci-fi mixed with a film noir hard-boiled detective story.
It almost feels like SVU, SVU Space Station. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's a bit on the nose, but it's still entertaining, I think. I mean, it's not,
Does it ever get fun or funny? Because there was nothing in any of this episode that was humorous.
I remember it does. There is a lot of, again, I'm going to rewatch the whole series before I go to season four. Because again, I have no family and nobody who loves me and no job and nothing to do. I just have free time to just binge television shows 20 hours a day and then maybe rub one out and go to bed. Thanks, Steven. That's what I do.
Yep.
I like this. Well, now, what's your take on the idea of pulling in giant ice chunks from outer space and processing them in a facility like this?
I mean, you know, that's I presume this is a thing we'll do one day. All right, so can we talk about? So we got lights in the helmets.
Yep.
Which you know how I feel about that.
Yep.
Another thing that
it makes you wonder, what is it that those lights are meant to illuminate?
I mean, like their faces in an
engineering sense.
Right, they're not.
No, in an engineering sense.
They're literally there for the camera, and that takes me out of the movie every damn time.
Yep. Was that your point of science that you wanted to come back to?
Or no, there was another one too.
Zero G.
Yeah. The other one was.
Wait, but could they have sex in zero G? Wouldn't thrusting push him back down?
I mean, no. I mean, well, you'd have to hold on.
Hold on to what?
Her.
She's cute.
The phone that Thomas Jane had, which you can see through. It's another one of my pet peeves.
Hologram phone, everybody has one.
I know, but it was one of my pet peeves, another pet peeve in science. In almost every futuristic thing post the invention of, you know, CGI, that's what screens look like. They're like, oh, it's see-through and we can see the character through from the back. And, you know, it's visually kind of interesting. But
oh, I thought it looked kind of like a regular phone with little holographic doodads on the left and right.
No, you can see through it. It was see-through. It was a transparent piece of plastic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's a terrible way to look at a computer because you can see everything behind it. And so, like, it's harder to see the screen when you're, like, looking through it. And you can also see the floor and your leg and whatever else underneath it. So, like, it's terrible design. And I don't think we're ever going to actually have those. It's one of those things that's purely for visuals in sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
It's really not very practical.
I think that in 300 years, I think our phones will probably still be just small handheld devices.
I mean,
obviously,
we'll
be much
phones,
more advanced.
They'll just be implanted in our brains at that point.
So. No, I won't implant anything.
You won't have to, because you'll be dead long before then. So
that's a horrible thing to say. What about this guy's arm? That's science.
I mean, he lost an arm. He seems remarkably unbroken up about it. Especially for a guy who uses his arms for his living.
Well, there's a discussion here that it can be replaced.
Prosthetic, so. Right, right. You can get a prosthetic. Still, you'd think that, like, hey, you know,
yeah,
what,
he
guy,
is
a manual laborer, and I just lost my arm.
No, he's in a relatively good mood, is what you're saying. Yeah. And yes,
I mean, the pain alone would be like, holy crap. You know, I suppose they could have some sort of super awesome painkillers that were not narcotic, I guess, and didn't make you loopy. But even so, like, if you're a manual laborer and you lose your manual, your man, after which manual labor is named.
Your manos. Yeah. I will tell you that having seen the show, the guy in the back, Amos, he is arguably the most intriguing character. He goes through some really interesting
buzz
stuff.
Cut right there?
Yep, yep.
He's
mostly a grunt early on, but he definitely gets more interesting as the series goes.
I think they're going for like submarine kind of. I will say this. I like the design of this stuff, and especially like the lighting, you know, in so much science fiction, futuristic science fiction stuff.
I think it's nicely shot too. Yeah. It's some really fluid, long, steady shots, and it's like, yeah, we're showing off the inside of our camera, of the inside of our set, but it's not super showy and flat, but it is like a nice long shot, so you can enjoy that.
I don't feel like there's any visual style in this that feels unique.
No. It's perfunct. It's rudimentary, but it's still. It works. It's almost like, I think it kind of plays into that lived-in, low-tech sci-fi feel. You know, maybe I'm just making excuses for a show that I like.
Whatever, you're allowed to like the show.
Saying that maybe that part of it is relatively low-budget in the early going. It's a sci-fi show, don't forget.
Guy? Like, some of the more interesting characters on this thing are like this original XO. Like, at least he has some sort of personality. This dude, Dirk Squarejaw here, like, that. You know, like, we get
told
that—
Well, you know that. Yeah, you know that theory, and we can use that moving forward on the regular show. But when you want to try and sell something, a TV show or a movie, in a global marketplace, Dirk Squarejaw is what they want.
Again, bullcrap, dude. Like, think of the pilot of The
Sopranos.
I don't think it's right.
I'm not
Bad.
Condoning it. I'm just telling you what I think the pervading mentality is.
Yeah, but that's not interesting. I mean, Jonathan Banks is more interesting than anything else in this entire episode because he's a way more interesting actor. And his character is given at least something that makes
him
unique.
It's that weird push and pull of once somebody is like, say, over 40 or 50, they have wrinkles and experience and maybe a little crack in their voice, and they have real, like, lived-in personality, whereas these younger guys and late girls might be interesting or might be pretty or might turn out to be pretty decent actors, but they don't have those wrinkles and the cracks in their voice and the gravitas.
I could not pick that dude out of a lineup of headshots or actors for actors. Like, I've looked at hundreds of headshots in my day as a director, and I'm watching him on the screen right now, and if you handed me six headshots and said identify which one's that guy, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, I know a lot of them so look alike. That is Stephen Strait.
Is that the same guy? Is that a different guy?
I think Stephen Strait.
I think that's a different guy.
You want to make just a purely practical argument? Forget moral and artistic, but that's a great reason to be super diverse in your casting. So nobody ever has to go, wait, which of those three brunette white guys am I supposed to care about?
I had that same problem when I was watching the Nolan World War II movie, Dunkirk. I spent 2/3 of that movie not being able to distinguish the three main characters from one another.
Funny, but the main thing I know Stephen Strait from is his very first feature when he did a very funny superhero comedy called Sky High.
Okay. I mean, he could see this guy being Superman on the CW or whatever. Like, he's got that kind of look to him.
He looks like a young Matt Dillon to me. I like him, but you're right. I'm sure he has personality when you sit down
and
have
dinner
with him.
He's a great guy.
That's the thing
as an actor or
miss.
As a whatever. I just, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes a character is meant to be stoic and quiet, but he just comes off as dull.
I keep coming back to this. You think about The Sopranos, you think about Breaking Bad, you think about Better Call Saul, and the pilots of those and the way they introduced their main characters and how interesting and fascinating those characters were right from the beginning. And this show is trying to rely on, okay, well, the world itself is kind of interesting. So we can grow into these characters or whatever.
Yep.
But I feel like, again, I feel like I'm watching Grey's Anatomy Space Station or, you know.
Maybe at this point, that's the kind of show they were pitching, which is, an ensemble workplace show. Obviously, it takes place in the future in a spaceship or a series of, space stations and whatnot. But it could be that kind of thing where they're...
And her. I mean, same thing with her. She's gorgeous, but not in a way that I find all that memorable.
She's not that interesting.
I think she's pretty beautiful, but...
The blonde?
She's my type, yeah.
Oh, she's very pretty, but I'm saying she's not that important.
No, she's... Well, I guess...
Going to vanish in a bit.
Is that it? Is she done on the show?
Yeah, dude, they blow up the ship.
I understand that, but the very first scene of episode two, which I watched just because it autoplayed, she's in.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's a flashback. So, they flashback to her a bunch of times.
It's him having a dream when he met her.
Okay. So she's not.
No. Yeah. The whole ship is good. They're the only five survivors.
Again, this color palette, man. Like, all of their skin looks gray. They look gray, but then there's these colors, there are flashings of colors in the background. It's such a weird choice.
And also, if this ship was going to survive, there's no way the captain would look like that. The captain would be somebody more authoritative. He wouldn't be a guy who looks like a gas station attendant.
I don't know. I mean, I like, again, that's an interesting choice to me because it goes against what you would expect from this kind of thing. Randy and I have a constant running thing about, because she loves post-apocalyptic stuff, and we're both like, we're never going to make it because only like incredibly beautiful people ever make it to past the apocalypse in fiction.
What do you think about these special effects here of them, the Canterbury and the
they're fine.
Weird look?
They look good. I mean, they're good. They look real. They don't look like bad CGI or whatever.
What about Dirk Square Jaw's six pack? You like that?
Oh yeah, look at that. They're very beautiful people. They're both good. They're both.
That's
great
part
to look
of the
at.
Reason. I mean, let's not be sexist, but he's handsome and he's cut. So I mean, that's a part. And he's not a bad actor. It's just he's cut. It's like when you see so many young guys who are kind of similar and kind of in similar heroic roles, they do blur together. I think he's a decent actor.
Yeah. Again, I'm not taking anything away from him as an actor. I'm saying the character is not particularly interesting, and.
It's only the first episode, though.
Again, that's fine. Like you can. So that's still an hour. Movies make interesting characters in 90 minutes. Movies have 15 minutes to have a character that's interesting that you want to follow, or you're out.
She's taking her pants off. What are you talking? Don't talk over that.
So like,
no, you're right. You're right. I mean, I'm looking at it from a long haul perspective, and you're looking at it from a hey. If I didn't know you, and we didn't have a podcast, and I said I'm going to watch three sci-fi shows and see which one I like most, this pilot might not do it. So it's a
it's
fair
also
point.
Maybe it's just not my kind of show. I mean, it's so self-serious and somber, and I'm just not. If you're going to do that, the characters have to be incredibly compelling.
I would say it's kind of serious. I wouldn't say it's self-serious. I wouldn't say it's like, portentous or anything.
It's just not my kind. It feels like Grey's Anatomy, which is another show I don't particularly care for.
What about
I don't like soap operas. So like a soap opera in space is not a selling point for me.
Why would there be a rat in a spaceship?
Well, so yeah, point of science. Good point. I'll tell you why. Because he's a rat. Don't you get it? Because he's about to sell them out and tell people. And so he sees a rat.
Dude, stick to the science. Don't get into symbolic foreshadowing. That's my niche. That's my expertise.
That's probably meant to be some sort of Scorsese call out from the end of The Departed.
Let me ask you this, Steven, because we just saw him do it. Why would one put sulfur into a cup of coffee?
Oh, is that what he did? Like he?
Yeah. That like they say it gives it a kick where they put the sulfur from a match into a cup of coffee.
I don't understand that at all.
Now sulfur is poisonous, right?
I mean, anything is poisonous if you take enough of it.
Not Popeye's chicken sandwich.
yeah, I'm pretty sure if you eat enough Popeye's chicken sandwiches, it will kill you. No point of science. what were we talking about before that?
We need a bell for when you say point of science, like a school bell. Ding, ding, ding.
What happened right before the sulfur thing? Because there was something there. Oh, the rat.
Yeah.
No, you would not have a rat on a ship. That doesn't make any sense at all. Like, rats were on ships like on the sea ships, or whatever, because they could literally walk across the plank and get onto the thing. Like, how would a rat get onto the ship in the first place?
Now, you're telling you don't like Shura here? You don't think Christine is funny, is interesting?
No.
She's a UN politician.
Yeah,
and
it's meant to be this juxtaposition.
You initially think, oh, she's going to be like the benign, friendly kind of woman politician who's warm and tough on the outside, but warm. And then later in this episode, she's torturing someone.
Yeah. And again, like, she turns from, oh, she's a grandma to, oh, I'm actually a scenery chewing villain. I don't find that compelling. I find that trite as well, to be honest.
It's kind of flawed, like anti-hero kind of.
Is it? I don't know. Maybe, in the future she's supposed
to be. Well, she obviously, she does some really interesting stuff. And one thing I'll tell you, if you do decide to continue with this show, it throws some really interesting monkey wrenches into the narrative. It doesn't play it safe. It goes to some.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe, it took me two full seasons to get into Walking Dead. And then it became one of my favorite shows ever. And then I stopped watching it.
So why? All right. Then that's a fair question. What made you stick with it for that first season and a half or so?
I gave up three or four times. Randy was watching it, and I kind of wanted to watch it with her. So mainly it was I saw some later episodes as she was watching them because she had continued on without me, and thought, okay, well, that some of this stuff that's happening actually looks like it's interesting, so maybe I need to get myself to that point. I do like this idea, this general idea of these people that grew up on
Mars.
Low. No, is it Mars? I thought they grew up on Ceres.
No, Mars.
Are you sure?
Ceres is the space station that's in the belt.
I understand. Ceres is an asteroid. And
no, this is a Martian spy who is being crushed under Earth's gravity.
Wait, but they show like the long hands and whatever else are things that Thomas Jane described as being natives. And in fact, the guy comes up to him and is like, oh, you're a native, but you don't look like a native because you took some sort of growth something or other when you were a little kid or whatever. And that's why
this guy here is a refugee who was born on Mars.
Okay, well, either way.
Not a refugee, but that's fine.
Whether it's Ceres or whether it's Mars.
Would that work? If your gravity, I mean, how would that work?
We don't really know if part of it. I doubt that, this whole, their bones would grow longer thing. That feels made up. But absolutely, like, your muscles would not grow strong as they would on Earth. Unless this is a problem we have with astronauts now that, spend a year in space or 6 months. They have to do a lot of rigorous exercise in order to not lose a whole bunch of muscle mass. And so growing up in that environment, you would never make that muscle mass to begin with. And it would be a very interesting.
No, I also meant the idea of like torturing someone just through.
Well, I mean, they're basically crucifying him. That's pretty much what's happening there. That's what crucifixion is.
Right. And the visual of that is really funny. Not funny, but the visual of that is really interesting because you look down and his legs are easily long enough for him to just stand up. And you're like, well, he's not chained there. So you're watching it. And that's why I think that sequence is very well directed, because your brain is like, why didn't he just stand up? And then it's like, oh, he literally can't because gravity is working overtime on him.
Yeah, no, and again, that's crucifixion. That's the whole point of crucifixion. It's not about the nails and bleeding. It's about your lower body not being supported, and you literally suffocate because your diaphragm has to work against the entire weight of your lower body in order to breathe, and so you slowly suffocate, and that's basically
when did you go to medical school?
Last week.
What do you know about diaphragms?
I know a lot about diaphragms.
Every time they cut to this guy, I think he looks like Jay Baruchel to me.
That the main guy?
Yeah.
That guy. Wait. The main? Yeah, he does have a little,
With the eyebrows, yeah.
You know who she reminds me of? The lead, not her, not the, the
her
blonde.
With the semi-mohawk?
No, the blonde girl.
Oh, the blonde looks like your wife?
No, she looks a little bit like Alina von Stroheim.
Oh, the star of Found Footage 3D, yeah. Now available for streaming on Shudder in 2 and 3D?
In four different versions. This is an interesting thing. So this is a thing that's pretty much a staple in a lot of space science fiction literature of the, you know, how do you accelerate faster than, you know, a few G's when the human body is not designed to withstand that kind of thing. And so here, like, I guess they have some sort of fluid that goes inside them that, you know, in there's a great book called The Forever War. It's a really, really good sci-fi book. And in there they have like these special like tanks that they go into, and the liquid, like, all of it's junk as far as, you know, from scientific point of view. Like, the problem with acceleration is there isn't any way to counter it. Like, and if you want to change directions, or you want to speed up or slow down, like,
wouldn't that be saying, like, isn't there a way to, like, let a car run into me at 100 miles an hour and have it not break my bones?
Basically,
isn't,
yeah,
kind, I mean, of the, it's, same, it's, thing. Like, right, once you accelerate to a certain point, it's going to strain your skin, your bones, your organs.
Exactly, you're going to break. Well, yeah. So it's one of the reasons why, like, when, you know, we, like, I'm conscious of this all the time watching Marvel movies, particularly with Iron Man, because, like, Iron Man can fall from a building and land. And, oh, but he's wearing a metal suit, so he's fine. He's like, no, because the metal suit is smashing into his body with the exact same amount of force that the ground would have.
Right,
been.
And even with shock absorbers, you're still smashing.
You're still,
from,
right, you're accelerating 200 from
floors,
right,
up.
You're accelerating from 200 miles an hour to zero in 0.3 seconds. Your body's just going to be jelly, like all your internal organs. Like your liver, right, needs time to slow down.
Mine?
If you stopped your body abruptly, your liver would keep going and it would, you know, come out your,
all right,
front,
then, probably. This is not related, but can you scientifically debunk the hilarious old wives' tale that if you're in a plummeting elevator and you jump at the exact last minute, mm-hmm, you could survive?
I believe they did a Mythbusters episode on that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I gotta look. That's something I'm gonna binge one day. I'll tell you something, and I'll throw this in for the happy birthday to my sister. Today's her 50th birthday. And the reason I bring that up is because she turned me on to Mythbusters. I think she has seen literally every episode.
It's,
and I think,
show,
there's, I think there's like 670 episodes.
Yeah.
And she has seen every one. And one day, I'm going to, you know, I binge on stuff like how'd it work, how it works, how was this made, or giant engineering. You know, I'll binge on any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I will.
No, I love that. It's a great show. But now,
all right,
from,
so,
a
in
physics
a nutshell,
point of view, from a physics
in
point
a nutshell,
of view,
why wouldn't that work?
From a physics point of view, it would work. It could work. The problem is you would have to time your jump with such precision that you couldn't actually do it. Like, from a practical point of view, it's impossible because you can't. You have no idea when the thing's actually going to hit, and so you know. But from a physics point of view, if you had something that could accelerate you away from the floor at just the right moment, then you could theoretically lessen the impact on you. Because, again, the point is that it's the acceleration that kills you. It's the going from 100 miles an hour to zero in a fraction of,
yeah,
a second.
Yeah, it doesn't even necessarily – obviously, it doesn't matter what you land on. It's the sudden stopping.
Right. I mean, it's just for the same reason that if you can jump off a second-story roof and survive – you know, if you land on your head, you're dead. If you land on your feet and you can cushion, I mean, when you think about when you jump off of something, you cushion your fall as you land by springing your knees. And what that does,
right,
is,
and also two stories doesn't really allow you to accelerate that much.
Right. Well, that's the point, right? So, but you know, you're making the impulse last over a longer period of time is essentially what it is, right? Because it's the same amount of force. The amount of force required to stop you is the same in both cases. But if you can spread that force over a slightly longer period of time, then your acceleration is going to be lower because you're not experiencing the same – or sorry, it's the same amount of energy you have to dissipate. But you're not experiencing for the same amount of force for the same amount of time. And so, you know, it's why things like shock absorbers work and that kind of stuff.
Right, so, but my question is, can you scientifically explain that guy's mustache, that guy who just left? It was killer porn mustache.
So there's a whole cryptic thing going on here.
Yeah, can I ask you this, Steven? Do you think that maybe your disconnect with the show is because it is three very disparate stories wedged into one 44-minute episode?
No, it's that none of those three disparate stories are compelling.
You're not slightly curious what happened to this girl?
No.
Okay.
I mean, that is kind of the only thing, is that opening sequence And then, you know, setting up this sort of mystery of where is this girl and what happened to her and what happened to the space station. Like, that's the only thing in this whole episode. But again, that's a plot thing. It's like, okay, well, I want to kind of vaguely want to find out what happened to this person. But I don't really know this person and I don't care about this person. So I don't really feel like I want to find out what happened to them.
See, when you're into a show, and obviously you can relate because you're into a lot of shows. And I think that given a shot, you could get into this one too, possibly. But when it cuts to from A to B to C story, I'm like, oh yeah, what's going on with Shura back at the UN? I'm curious about that. And they'll give you a long enough plot point where you're like, oh yeah, what's going on back with, you know, like I think those three stories are measured out. It could help that I've seen the episode twice now.
Yeah.
Cause there's a lot of information in this episode. And if you're just not interested.
Yeah, I mean, and that was part of the other thing, right, is that it almost feels like too much information. And you talked about how sort of like, oh, we're just kind of like going to throw people right into it. I felt confused enough that it made me feel like
Maybe not even confused, but just slightly behind.
Just said like, work too hard.
yeah, like, wait, how do they know each other again? But again, you know, I think it's fair for a sci-fi show to ask you to just, you know, fill in the blanks for yourself.
Well, so it's one of the reasons why I think that this structure maybe is not the best choice, because it's forcing you to do with both sets of catch up at the same time. It's like, I don't know these characters. I don't know anything about them. I'm being introduced to like 15, 20 characters over the course of this thing. I don't know which ones I'm supposed to care about and which ones I'm not. Like, I don't know.
No, it's a fair comment too. You almost wish that the pilot had been maybe like a two-hour TV pilot, you know, like a movie, or they had said, all right, episode one is going to be about story A, episode two is going to be about story B, and then C, story three, and then we intercut throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, because I feel – because they also don't – I'm like, this spaceship one feels the most compelling of the three. There's really not anything happening in the Thomas Jane story. Like, the Thomas Jane story feels like he's just kind of going around and meeting some people and getting some exposition out of the way. Like,
right, we're kind of dropped into act two of A Gumshoe, and it's slightly interesting but not all that gripping, you know.
Yeah, and it keeps cutting back to them, and you know, whereas this story, at least, like, this story has the disadvantage of, again, this main character that I don't find particularly interesting, but it does have this twist, because I do find the female character somewhat interesting.
I like this long, it's showy, but I like this long crane, this long
lights in the helmet, man. Ugh. If we ever make a space movie, I'm not putting lights in the helmet. I'm just letting you know that right now.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
You're talking about Naomi, by the way. Yeah, and it's interesting because they have a Naomi, who's a woman of color, and then they have I believe a Hispanic guy with the hat on, and the other three are white brunette guys. And they, you know, like, I know the difference between the three because I've seen the show, and I also know Paulo Costanzo from a lot of movies. You know him too. He's the doctor guy. He's usually very funny. He's like the comic relief in this show for the first season anyway. But yeah, if you're brand new to the show and you don't know these actors that well, you're like, all right, this is the kind of moody hero, white brunette guy. Here's the kind of hot-headed weapons, white brunette guy. And here's the sarcastic doctor, white brunette guy.
Yeah, no, it's just, it does show you just like how important from a storytelling perspective, diversity in casting is. And that doesn't even necessarily need to be racial diversity or gender diversity.
Right. Make one fatter, like, taller, make one
right.
darker.
There's no, you know, body diversity almost at all in unless you have somebody like Jonathan Banks or you have somebody like that Captain Guy where you're like, okay, well, we got the pudgy. You're allowed to have pudgy guys. You're not allowed to have pudgy women at all. You're certainly not allowed to have any really plus size people unless they're background extras or comic relief or something along those lines. And so, like, everybody just, you know, who was it? Oh, I can't remember what it was done, but you know, it's that CW sort of thing. It's that aesthetic of like everybody's beautiful and therefore nobody's interesting.
It's so funny that you say that because I was just about to say, I think a lot of the casting in this show is good. And I also think that the marching orders were, if this show is ever going to find an audience, it's going to be with people who are 23 or 24. Therefore, we have to load up the cast.
Yeah. I mean, think about something like Alien, right? Where like there's a lot of white guys in that, on that ship, but you don't ever have any difficulty distinguishing one from the other.
Oh, yeah. You know the difference between John Hurt and Tom Skerritt. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it feels like the kind of people that would be rough space roughnecks out on this, you know, mission out in deep space, like some older guys. And, you know, it's like that to me is interesting. Like that's immediately interesting just from a visual point of view. But then also the characters themselves are also given, you know, very interesting. And so, you know, you think about you're trying to tell me like, oh, it's just the pilot. Like, well, think about how within the first 20, 30 minutes of Alien, you understand all of those guys really well and they're compelling.
Right. And there is something to be said for, like I talked about earlier ad nauseum, is that like when you look at it, like a Tom Skerritt who's been, or let's say like a 50-year-old space pilot, you're like, that guy's probably seen everything. Man, how many escapes and chases and you know, bad stuff has he seen? And then you see somebody who's like, the lead in this, who I like, but how much could he have seen?
He's all like 25. Of these guys are young. They're all young. They're all like, I don't believe that I don't know if this is a military ship or a mining ship, whatever the heck it is. Like, you need strong people to do the actual mining, the manual labor-y kind of people. But like,
right, there'd be a disparity. You'd have a couple of guys who are under 30, and you'd have a lot of people who are 35, 38, 41.
Yeah. 50, 60 almost.
Yeah. Even, Like, crane operators. Yeah, yeah. No, it is an interesting.
I mean, think about a movie, even just like a movie set. You go on a movie set, and there's like 50-year-old gaffer guys and young PAs and, you know, people that, you know, anybody to get really good at a job. Or think about like a fishing boat. You watch one of those.
No, it's
like,
great shorthand that casting directors and directors and, you know, that smart directors and casting directors know is, you know, why does a character actor like the wonderful M. Emmett Walsh, why do people call him in? Because his, not only is he a great actor with a great voice, but his face tells a story.
Yeah. I mean, and think about like if you watch something like a show, like a reality show about like fishermen, like The Deadliest Catch or something like that. And think about what those guys look like and the diversity of, you know, they're not all.
Yeah, and a lot of them are grizzled 57-year-olds. Yeah.
They're, you know, and if some of that's TV, right? People want to look at beautiful people. I get that. Like, that's, you know, but particularly for a show like this that is kind of going for this kind of gritty realism sort of thing, like, why would you sideline the only interesting character and interesting character actor? And I don't, you know, maybe there's an answer to this if you watch the rest of the scene. I don't know whether Jonathan Banks becomes important to the series or not, or was that a cameo and that's his one scene? Like, you tell me. I'm asking you. Like,
oh, I'm not answering.
Okay,
because I want you to keep watching.
Well, it just feels like a dumb choice to have him in one scene for 2 minutes.
Well, I mean,
he's the most compelling actor.
If you need to have a scene where a guy who doesn't want to be the executive officer is suddenly thrust into the role, you have a scene where the former XO either dies or goes nutty, and he went nutty. So maybe it's just a device. Maybe he is an actual character.
Well, I mean, I feel like he's got to be a character because you wouldn't cast. Although, when did this come out? No, I mean, this is definitely post Breaking Bad. So you don't cast Jonathan Banks in a cameo
episode. I'm going to be honest because nothing good comes of lies. But the reason I won't tell you is because I don't remember.
You don't remember?
He definitely is not in episode two, though.
In the show or not? Like,
nope, I don't remember if he comes back. But no, he might come back with an explanation. But like as a regular? No.
And what about Jay Hernandez? Because I saw him listed as guest star. But
hate when they do that because he's playing a main character, and every time you see guest starring, you're like, well, I think he'll probably die sometime at this season, during the season.
Yeah.
Because why would he not be in the regular cast? He's a known actor.
Yeah. Like, why would you list him in the pilot as a guest star? Like, he's clearly, you know.
Contractually, if he's not a series regular, he has to be listed as a guest star.
I mean, he is the guy that who is there.
I know, but. Spoiler.
He's there. He's literally there to he's the, you know, the neophyte. So that
he's
Thomas Jane
Page.
Has somebody to deliver exposition to.
Yeah. Like, no, he is. He's the Ellen Page from Inception. That's what his role is, again,
feels too small for that actor, which makes me think
Steven,
he must
be. It's like, are you going to let them deliver exposition or not? You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
I get that. But my point is like, I would have rather seen him as this Dirk Squarejaw character. That would have been a more interesting.
I was just thinking that. Wouldn't the show be, I mean, at least the pilot, because the show gets real good. I'm going to give it, you know, but wouldn't it be slightly more interesting if Thomas Jane was one of the young crew and the young guy was the gumshoe? Like, just switch those two.
Oh, I was saying, like, Jay Hernandez as this, just, you know, as this.
As Squarejaw, as Stephen Strait.
Yeah, whatever.
Now that, you know.
So no, he's only in one episode. Jonathan Banks literally only shows up for one scene of one episode of this show and then never comes back. Really?
Yep. There you go. I knew. I just didn't want to tell you.
What?
That's a lie.
That's just like what I'm curious just from a business point of view, from like, did he owe somebody a favor? Was he like, just like, no, hey, that's all cool.
Right. Can
like,
I, all right. I'll kick into film critic mode here. A lot of times you cast a name or interesting character actor in a role like that. Well, A, I think he probably had some stuff that hit the cutting room floor, and B, his name adds some cachet, and it's like kind of an interesting misdirect, but you're right. It is a weird.
Okay. So then why not, like, for instance, have him be the captain of the ship who has a much bigger role throughout the pilot and then dies at the end of it. And then it would be a genuinely sort of surprising, like, oh, wow, I thought he was going to be a main character in the show and they killed him off at the end of the pilot. That's an interesting choice to me. Like,
right. So it was basically just a handy plot device to get him into the XO role. That's all it was.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, I don't know. That's.
And I mean, Jonathan Banks, you know, he is the kind of guy who will show up for one scene in a sci-fi show. Let's be fair. He is.
I guess.
A good actor, but I mean, no, this was 2015, not 2013. My bad.
Yeah, it was 2015, which is certainly, you know, that's post Better Call Saul starting. That's, you know, and it's definitely post his, you know, I would say star turn on the latter seasons.
So that's going to be our big takeaway from this episode, ladies and gentlemen, is that Steven didn't love the show, definitely didn't hate it, but why is Jonathan Banks the guy if you're only going to have him for one scene? And it's a fair question because it's not like something that, you know, you're watching an action movie and all of a sudden the Steven Seagal character dies in act one and you're like, holy crap, it's not that kind of delivery.
Right, exactly. It's not, you know, it's not Janet Leigh dying a third of the way through the movie. It's not
better.
Even Bill Murray showing up as himself at the end of Zombieland, like for one scene or two scenes or whatever it is. Like,
dude, spoiler.
It's baffling to me unless he was supposed to be. And then although he's on the ship at the end of this, right? Presumably,
Do you gets have
blown
Eddie
on the ship?
Yeah.
So uh-huh. Weird.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's bizarre to me. Anyway, that's the episode. It's done.
So Steven, overall impressions on the pilot. Didn't love it, but if I was your wife and I said I really like that show, I want you to watch it, you'd sit and watch it with me. But since I'm just your friend, you're probably not.
I don't know. I mean, again, she and I have such a large backlog of stuff.
Is she familiar with this show?
No, because we don't have Amazon. I mean, she's heard of it, I'm sure, but we don't have Amazon. So she'll like it. I can tell you this, is she'll like it. She loves like the 100 and all of these like teeny bopper CW post-apocalyptic sci-fi shows that I can't stand. So I bet she'll start watching it and she'll enjoy it. And maybe, you know, like as with The Walking Dead, that'll get me into it at some later point. But I'm not willing to give a show a full season to catch me. I might give it a couple more episodes.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I especially having just got Amazon and now I want to watch Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and The Boys and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh, I quite liked it. I've heard Maisel is great, never saw it. And The Boys, I liked it. It starts strong.
I watched the pilot the other day and I really enjoyed it. So,
yeah. It balances nihilism and like legit just straight comedy pretty well.
I mean, I didn't love that pilot, but I felt compelled that I want to watch more. Right. And so,
hey, that might be one we could do. We maybe could do a commentary for The Boys.
Yeah. I was thinking about that as I was watching it. I don't know if there's enough science in there, but then again, we haven't talked a whole lot about the science on this thing. So
do you had any final science points that you wanted to, I mean, like the idea of how about this? I'll just interview you a few questions. A space station in an asteroid belt?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And again, it's on an asteroid. Ceres is an actual asteroid and it's spherical and it's, you know, big enough that it's actually Ceres, I believe, is considered a dwarf planet now. So, since that
like Pluto?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's smaller than Pluto, but it's
your face is smaller.
It's
than
big
Pluto.
Enough to be spherical under its own gravity, which is, you know, an accomplishment for an astronomical body. So, presumably that would be a good place to set up a mining operation.
This has been a bonus episode of Science versus Fiction on behalf of my vociferous, is that a good word for you? You're not vociferous. My illustrious, I said illustrious earlier. Give me a good adjective.
Laconic.
Laconic is a good word for you because you are often laid back. I want to sign off. We will be back with a regular episode, and I think we're going to do some Rick and Morty and Battlestar Galactica.
One of these days we need to do something that I actually like, because everybody's going to start thinking that I just hate everything because I don't like Battlestar.
What sci-fi show do you like?
I don't know. We'll figure it out offline.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.